Peter Yarrow, welcome. You were right in there, I mean, playing this acoustic folk rock, folk music, and then the bills that you were playing on were with guys like Hendrix and Miles. And I just want you to talk to younger generations about the importance, not racial diversity, but musical diversity.
We were at the Hollywood Bowl, and they said, well, you have to have an opening act. And I said, well, we don't want one. We don't need one. I said, well, you've got to. I said, well, all right, then we're going to get somebody we love and respect. And we got Thelonious Monk to open for us.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about that experience. That's phenomenal.
Oh, it was amazing because I went on stage first knowing that people wouldn't really, a lot of them just, it was out of their ilk. They wouldn't know what they're listening to. So I went on first to just tell them how much we admired him and valued what he had done and who he was musically and how the musical dynamic of the times had so informed so many people and brought us into this new era. And by the time they went on stage, they were ready to listen. And they were engaged, and he was very, very well received. We also had Dave Brubeck at another time open for us at the Hollywood Bowl for the same reason. Yeah, it was true that at the time people had a much broader palette of musical taste, and it was expected, it was encouraged, it was inherent in just what people were about. But there was a division, and that's why this whole crisis occurred in Newport between going electric and staying. What to everybody there was kind of a way of signifying your commitment to a new, better way in a better world, and that was staying acoustic. And when Bobby went electric, of course, well, hell broke loose, and it wasn't because they didn't like the music. Although I must say that the sound system itself was incapable. We didn't have monitors that were appropriate. We tried to set the sound check so that people could hear themselves, but the only song that really worked was Maggie's Farm, and the others did not. And there were lots of reasons that people just got crazy. But mostly, if you went electric, it was copping out. It was a way of saying, I don't believe in the world of our perspective about making an authentic, caring society out of this culture that we were handed from the 50s. Where women were supposed to be in one place in society, where blacks were in a certain place. You know, the whole greening of America was in the hearts and minds of the folk audience, which was vast at the time and dominated the airwaves in the early 60s with the number one selling albums and singles. The whole idea was that if you went electric, you were going commercial, you were copping out. And so that division did exist. Of course, it was a fallacious division. It was absurd. But it was symbolic of that perspective.
I've interviewed Dave Holland and Bernard Purdy and Chuck Rainey and Jack DeJohnette and John Simon and so many cats who wound up going to Woodstock. And then this idea of all these guys wanting that release from the urban centers, sort of the urban centers closing in and saying, wow, you know, and you were the one that hipped them to Woodstock.
My mother bought a tiny little cabin, not in the town, but out and not terribly far, where that my uncle AJ had, and in 1963, and this was prior to the March on Washington, blowing in the wind Legend had been released and literally peaked the week prior to August 28th, when we had the first March on Washington. Well, of course, we had the many other marches, and we had the 50th anniversary this past August 28th. And it was boiling hot in the city. And Bobby was a friend of mine. I said, come on up, you know, and hang out with me with Susie. Susie Rotolo in the cabin. And I was going to Art Students League, as I had when I was a kid, because I used to love to paint, and that was a direction that I thought I'd be taking. And I didn't know, you know, at the time, you know, that folk music and its capacity to build community would kind of take over my life. But Bobby came up with Susie after a day and a half. My mother took off. We had the best time. We'd come home. Bobby was writing on a typewriter, which was his MO. And he'd have written Only a Pawn in the Game and Hard Rain is Going to Fall or whatever, and Susie and I would have painted. And we had a glorious time. And in a way, I think, you know, the Bob Dylan's Dream song, you know, just might very well have been inspired or by that experience. But he fell in love with Woodstock, and there was a certain kind of hierarchy that was established, whereby there were the people who were the stars or whatever, and the band came up there, and Albert, and it changed dramatically, and there were people making pilgrimages there to see the folk singers or get a, as you described in your introduction to me, you know, it really was that kind of a crazy place, which in many ways ruined the spirit that had been up there, because that Bobby, for all his genius in personal terms, was there was always kind of an element, I think, you know, of fear, almost paranoia about people around him. And Albert certainly tried to protect Bobby and was a genius at protecting all of his artists from the forces that might in some way injure them, particularly from the corporate world, the, you know, the world of the biz. But also there were people who made expeditions there. And what did they want to do? They wanted to sleep with Bobby. They wanted to get high with Bobby or just hang out with him. And that was true of the other artists. So there was that division, those people who were part of the group that were being sought and those people who were up there on a pilgrimage. And that really, to a large degree, altered it so that it was really, really unhappy and uncomfortable for me. And to this day, it's still painful.
Can you talk a little bit about the dissemination of information in the 21st century and the restriction? People talk about freedom or freedom of choice, but if you're not seeking, if you're not curious, if you don't really seek other alternative outlets for information, not just news, but it could be anything.
Yeah.
As opposed to the radio dial when you were coming into your own as an artist, have you become more restricted?
If you have the separation of people's information or creative pipeline so great that you don't have a unanimity of spirit that can be created as you did in the 1960s, when people were moved to sign on to and to work for an end to racism and discrimination in the United States. And you saw that it was a fine, fine moment in our history when we gathered together to make sure that our nation was not hypocritical when we said with liberty and justice for all, because people of color did not enjoy that at all. We don't have the communication systems that reach people in that kind of way. But what we do have now, there are two areas where it exists and or it's evolving. Certainly when Schindler's List came out, a film like Schindler's List, or Lincoln, you know, that kind of wave of awareness really captured people's hearts. So in film, sometimes that can happen. But the way it will happen, if it's going to happen, is in this kind of going viral phenomenon on the net, where something, because it's a democratized medium, really captures the spirit of people and really just goes right to the heart of what people intrinsically really want to experience, something that just really moves them. Now, it's not at that point, and something going viral now is just the tip of the iceberg. But ultimately, I believe that the savior of the culture might very well be the fact that the net is going to be the place where, not mediated by commercial interests, the will of the people, the good heart of the people, the authenticity of the people can be expressed.
Why has peace become affiliated with weakness?
What has shifted in our country, and there are a lot of reasons for it, is the perception of who we should be and what we should be and what constitutes a human being who is successful and admirable. We have a nation that now finds ridicule as a sport, where ridicule and humiliation is so much a part of the drama. And people watch it like the Roman circus of old, where they're watching, you know, lions eating Christians. But instead of that, they're seeing people's psyches being damaged. And that is an example to the kids. And the kids see these role models, and forgive me, also the same kind of mean-spiritedness and cruelty and delight in injury rather than in trying to work together and find resolution. They see that in the Congress. And then we expect them to act differently from the way they are. And we expect them not to emulate these role models. And we expect them to be kind to each other. And yet, these people on television who are being cruel are getting famous for either being dysfunctional or for being skillful at humiliating others. And what we have is an increasing black hole of empathy. I work in a hospice. I sing for the patients. When I'm singing for them, nobody's wearing their jewels. Nobody's talking about their new car or their new killing on the stock market. All they want is to be loved and to love somebody and to feel safe. And all the people working there are like angels because they are feeling a sense of meaning in their lives because they're able to give in that way. That's the kind of thing that really sustains us. The appearance of feeling important because you've got a gold medal hanging around your neck and you go into Las Vegas and you say, oh, see how respected I am because they're sucking up to you. That is part of what has gone wrong. That is not what we ultimately want. What people ultimately want in their, when it comes right down to it, is to feel meaningful, to feel that they have a place in the world, to feel that they can give something, to be loved, and to serve one another. And so it's skewed the entire culture. And that answers your question, in a way, of what the failures are that have made the word peace be associated with the idea of weakness. It's the same reason that being caring is associated, and kind is associated as being effeminate or weak. It is, the culture has become a bellicose, warlike, a culture of hyper competition. And it is the task that I embrace with Operation Respect and virtually every time I get on stage to once again proclaim the emperor has no clothes. People sing along, they feel comfortable, they love one another, they feel a sense of wonderful, authentic community. Authentic is the critical word. And they go out, they say, I feel so young. I feel so wonderful. I haven't felt this way in so long. Because to a large degree, that is not the common experience anymore. But we need to reassert it. And one of the ways we can do that is by giving the kids an education in which they become empathetic. They learn how to walk in each other's shoes, to resolve conflict non-violently and creatively, to value differences rather than abhor them, to have a peace place in the classrooms where they work things out, to write the Constitution of Caring for their school. All these things, and it makes a huge difference. That's what we need to do. We need to break this cycle of cruelty, of disrespect, of monetary adoration of wealth and power and fame. And I don't mean fame like a Nobel Peace Prize winner. I mean fame a la the Kardashians.